Welcome to the Solari Food Series audiocast. This is your host, Pete Kennedy. Farming is difficult enough without having to deal with overzealous regulators who take enforcement actions against farmers when there is no evidence of the farm operation posing any threat to the public health. All too often when this happens, the farmer's customers did not take the action within their power to help defend the farmer. One individual who did go the extra mile for his farmer when the regulatory agency brought a court action was Mike Lobsinger, a retired businessman from Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. When the Michigan Department of Agriculture sought a court order against farmer Joe Golombieski to stop his distribution of nutrient-dense dairy products such as raw cream and raw butter, Mike successfully intervened as a party in the case. His intervention was largely responsible for the judge deciding the case in the farmer's favor. As the ruling establishment works to substitute synthetic food for real food in the conventional system, stronger local food communities and tighter bonds between farmers and their patrons will be critical in maintaining optimal health. The willingness that Mike showed to stand up for his farmer and his freedom of food choice sets an example for the rest of us, and we need more like Mike Lobsingers. And with that, Mike, welcome to the Solari Food Series.
As always, Pete, thank you.
Okay, well, let's start off. Just in a lot of states like Michigan, there's no access to raw dairy if you go into a supermarket. So how did you discover raw milk?
You know, we've talked about this before. It's funny, as I try to think back on it, I guess as a kid in the early 50s, milk came in bottles, and there was something romantic about it. You know, a bunch of little kids, you'd go to school, you'd have these little bottles, you'd pierce a straw through it. And by the time I was in third grade, believe it or not, they had gotten rid of bottles. And they didn't replace them with plastic. They replaced them with cartons.
Right.
I don't know if it's taste buds in a kid or whatever, but in any case, I just couldn't drink the darn stuff. My love affair was over. But like so many things that go on in life, you remember it, right? And then they came out with the plastic things, and I was able to drink a little milk, but I never really got any affinity for it again. And then years later, I found a local dairy in Michigan that I went in the store. It was a little boutique store, and they had bottled milk. It was, I can't think of the name of the dairy. It's not Guernsey. Guernsey is one of the local dairies in Michigan, but it was another one. And in any case, I started to get that. And more often than not, the milk was sour. So I didn't do that. It turned out that the milk was pasteurized, but wasn't homogenized. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you did see a little cream in it. And that's what I liked. But I quit drinking that too. And I thought, well, you know, I'm just done with milk. I'm never going to rekindle the love affair. And then it was 2006. I happened to see about a raid by Richard Hebron in Michigan, just outside Ann Arbor, Michigan. And it hit national attention, the raid, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, hit everywhere. Obviously, I know now you were involved in that. You know more about it than I do. But then I started thinking, wait a minute, who is this guy? He's selling milk fresh from the farm? And somehow that's illegal? I mean, that's when I started to acquaint myself with it. And it was only a few weeks later that literally I signed up for Richard's co-op and started to get milk from him. And that's like 2006 or 2007. And I've been drinking, you know, raw milk ever since, and somehow have gotten involved into the fray of how to keep our freedom to drink it. But that's how it started.
Well, it's interesting with Richard. That was, just a big raid on his. They pulled him over, I think, in his milk truck on I-94. They went into his house and went into his bathrooms to look for contraband. But the interesting thing about that, Mike, was that it was about 6 months between the time they raided him and the time he was made an agreement with the state to be able to start up his operation again. And there were a number of members of his buyers club that he had, I think, that were afraid of other raids, and they didn't buy anything from him for maybe 2 or 3 months. And then a lot of them just realized that their health wasn't as good. And that's what brought them back to Richard. It was the healthiest food they could find, and their health was suffering because they weren't patronizing him. But anyway, the farmer we're talking about in this case is Joe Golombieski, who runs Hill High Dairy in Standish, Michigan. So how'd you find out about him?
Well, there were, in an effort to get raw milk, I started researching it. And obviously, I said I signed up with Richard and his co-op. And then I signed up with a gal named Jenny Samuelson, who I dearly respects, done a lot of hard work in the state of Michigan.
Absolutely.
Jenny wasn't a farmer, but what she did, which was different than what Richard was doing, Richard, we dealt with on the co-op, where we signed a co-op agreement, and Richard also did the deliveries. Now, Jenny was not a farmer. She had a contract with a farmer, and she basically was sort of a middle person that did the deliveries. And for some reason, the state honed in on her, and we can get into why that is later. It was a little bit clandestine, a little bit on the more rotten side of things, shall we say. There were some vendettas involved. But in any case, she got raided on right. After I had signed up with her. And that was I'd been with her for years. And she got raided in 2014.
Right.
And she had a different farmer. She was using a farmer that she I think she had a relationship with. And then she had a falling out with him. But since she was the delivery person, she took most of the customers, and she then signed up at a different farm, which was the Gobeleskis. That's the farm she went with. And it was 2014 that she got raided in Michigan. This one again took worldwide attention because they went onto the farm, incredibly enough. They cracked eggs, if you can figure that out. They threw away meats. They took all the milk in his tanks, and fresh milk, and just destroyed it. It was a ransacking that was on YouTube, for God's sake.
Well, yeah.
And that's when I got involved. Because, well, my milk was on that truck at that time. And that's when I first contacted an attorney. And he thought it was a little too late to intervene, that it would be hard to grip what they were saying, hard to get a legal grip. It wasn't an ideal situation to intervene. But I felt at the time they were going to come back for more. And that's when I really started to get involved legally. And that's where we'll pick up, I think, our topic of conversation.
Well, right. Yeah, it's one of the worst things about these raids is just the fact that thousands of dollars of nutritious food wind up in a landfill. And that was the case with the Samuelson raid. But around that time, and this was really started by Richard Hebron's case, the Michigan Department of Agriculture came up with this policy that enabled people to get raw milk through the farm through just a herd share or herd lease agreement. So if you could talk about the agreement you had with Joe, who, and just how that worked.
Well, there are two parts of this, and you can chime in with some of the more legal things. I'll tell you what I thought at the time. First, there was the Richard one, where the judge really found it a bit distasteful to prosecute this farmer. And in fact, there were some rumors that the judge was actually drinking Richard's milk at the time. So the judge wasn't happy with it and threatened, was my understanding in talking to Richard, that judge thought about throwing the book at the officials, the government officials that did the raid. And he strongly urged them to set up some kind of council where Richard could go back in business. Now, so they got a group of people, professors, scientists, farmers, whoever, and people from the state, and they all got together, and like so many programs, they spent a few years coming up with some agreement. But what was interesting about the agreement was not that people could now have an official herd share agreement with a farmer and then get milk from their own cows. That wasn't the interesting part. The interesting part was a definition that was in there. They had a processing definition. And they said, you know, these people can go get milk from their cow. That's fine. We don't have any problem with that, as long as they understand the dangers, blah, blah, blah. But I'll tell you what, they're not able to process anything. They're not able to make anything from that milk. So, you know, processing would include things, you know, like butter, for example. But what's interesting is that they also, and it was very vague, so it never got discussed, you were not allowed, or if you never got a confirmation that you could have cream. You could separate the cream from the milk. Now, that's an interesting thing because it has a reverse side to it. The state ultimately liked the word cream, and they just wanted cream because it's, the word's different than milk. And they wanted that to be indicative of a process, that cream is actually created. Well, if cream is created in a process, then by definition, skim milk is created in the process, okay? But the problem with skim milk is it has the same word milk. So it gets harder to apply that as a process as much as just, you know, a thinner milk.
Right. It's
like cream would be a thicker milk, but they like the word cream. Now, the reason that they did that, it was obvious because these dairy associations that were heavily involved in this and funding these politicians and funding these agencies, they really were okay with a group of people going to get a gallon of milk, but they wanted no part of cream. For some reason, cream scared the bejesus out of them. I mean, I think it's because they considered cream a profit center where they could get people to be convinced that skim milk was healthy, while at the same time making ice cream and half and half and all the things that were very, very highly profitable. And they just didn't want, it was my opinion, that they just didn't want any compromise when it came to cream. So it wasn't long thereafter we were going to have trouble. Because, for example, Richard was, we were getting cream as part of our agreement, as we were with Jenny. And that was ultimately going to be used as a loophole to get Jenny. Okay. And there's another reason why Jenny was different than Richard at that point and why they didn't come back after Richard. They came back after Jenny because they were looking for a battleground to stop the cream, stop the cottage cheese, stop anything ancillary to milk. Richard scared them because of what had previously happened. But Jenny was a bit easy pickings because she was sort of a middle person. They could consider her and paint her as a retailer. And the farm that she was using was also a certified dairy farm, meaning that it was an organic dairy farm, but it was subject to dairy laws, whereas Richard was not subject to dairy laws. Because there was no dairy farm involved selling milk to the public. But the Gobolewski farm had started selling certified grass-fed raw milk to places like Horizon and the other Organic Valley. Okay. I don't know which one he was with.
Yeah, he was with Horizon.
And so the state would be able to go to his farm and they could legally go through the farm and look around to make sure he was, you know, following dairy laws. Well, it wasn't soon that they they said, you know, really, he's got another partnership here with a group of people that, you know, have a herd share. And it wasn't long before they thought they had a loophole to shut him down. And thus the raid on Jenny.
Right. Okay. Couple things. You mentioned Richard. I think part of this audio cast is to show just customers of farm what they can do to protect or defend the farmer. And in Richard's case, as you said, there was a prosecutor looking at bringing an action against him in Cass County, Michigan. And there were anywhere from 150 to 200 members of Richard's Buyers Club who wrote that prosecutor saying just how much Richard's food had benefited their health. So the prosecutor was kind of at the point where he was saying, wait a minute, am I prosecuting someone for making people well? So that definitely helped. And I think you're right too with Jenny as a middleman, just making it easier for them to go after him, because I guess she was basically an agent. I mean, you had the others getting milk from the Golombieski farm had a herd lease agreement with them, which gives you the right, the property rights that an owner would have during the term of the lease. And it's, as you said, they did have someone come, you know, routinely a couple of times a year to inspect. And I still remember that inspector's name. It was Amber Matulis. So, yeah, if you can get into what happened when, she set foot on the farm.
Well, we go back to the raid now. She's raided in 2013 or 2014. I'm a customer. And, you know, I really wanted to help Jenny out. She was very distraught. I wasn't happy. I thought it was just dirty pool. I thought it was obscene. So I had some emotion involved in it more than, I mean, I just wasn't there to go buy milk. You know, I was there for my rights to food and, you know, all of those things. Right. So I had some emotion invested in this. Now I had been involved in federal lawsuits in my professional life was in computer software, and I started a computer software division, became quite large. So anyway, as with computer software, you find yourself with patent lawsuits and the like. And I've been in federal courts with complex lawsuits. And one of the things that always struck me is you walk in with all of these, I mean, these high priced lawyers, and you've got all these angles, and, you know, and the judge has got all these briefs that his people are reading and blah, blah, blah. And finally the judge, and I remember this one federal judge in Chicago, he just said to everybody, excuse me, just what the hell is going on here? What the hell is going on here? And I could sympathize with him. And he was a federal judge. He was a fairly good one too. And I thought to myself, that's really the way it is. Just what the hell is going on here? Well, I took that attitude when they came after Jenny, and there were no court proceedings on the first raid. It was all, the state just abused their power and nobody stopped them. And that's the way it is. And they didn't think they could be stopped.
So they raided both Jenny's vehicle and the
Columbia. Well, they raided everything. Right. They went back to the farm and they took care of business at the farm. They confiscated her vehicle. You know, all the ugly things that you can do. They padlocked it. And then ultimately, when it was unpadlocked, the food was rotten. So they all threw it out. You know, all of this ugly stuff. So I felt they were going to come back for more, because they told Jenny that she just had to fix a few things. It was a scam. They wanted her to quit, but she wouldn't quit. So she followed along with everything they told her to do. And one of the things they told her to do was to rewrite her contract. And everybody would have to have an individual contract, and it would have to be signed by both the farmer and the person. And it was really convoluted. Whereas prior, we had only had the contract with Jenny, and she signed a contract with the farm. So,
right.
So that's all that happened. They made us sign all these, you know, extra paperwork. I read the contract. I was horrified. I was upset.
excuse me. And I said, you know, they're going to come back for more. That's just the fact of the matter. They're going to come back for more. So I started to get prepared for it. And that's really how it all, how I ultimately got involved in it, knowing they were going to come back for more. And indeed, they did come back for more.
So basically, every time this inspector came, she would confiscate products meant for the leaseholders like yourself, correct?
You know, that's how it started. That's how it started. They started harassing. It was obvious what they were up to. It was obvious that they were going to go to court, and I was getting prepared for it. And I was going to come up with a different angle than what was being, than anybody had ever done. And that's what you and I have talked about over the years. That's how you and I met. It was from right. This different angle. And my angle was, the farmer has nothing to do with this. My angle was, why is the state taking product that I own? I'm not a dairy farmer. I'm not selling it at Publix or Kroger. You know, I don't even know why. The question is, why are they there? So ultimately, I told the Gobolewskis, they had a refrigerator there where some people would come pick up the milk directly. I wanted a bottle of skim milk in there that I ordered all the time. And I wanted it in that refrigerator with my name on it, so that if it was confiscated, that skim milk, I wanted to know why skim milk was confiscated. Again, not cream. I wanted skim milk because I figured a judge, if we went to court, would think, why the hell are they going after skim milk? I mean, cream is a different word, as I said earlier, but skim right. milk, the judge goes to the store. He probably buys the stuff. And he's probably thinking, why would they make that illegal? I can tell you right now, the state did not like that angle. But that was only the second angle I was at. The real angle they hated was that I was in there for my rights. So again, now the state's showing up at the farm. They're harassing. And then lo and behold, he gets the proverbial summons to appear in court, that he's in violation of dairy law.
Right. And I remember, yeah, first they wanted to get an injunction against Joe for preventing him from violating any Michigan dairy law. And, you know, like you were saying, their view was, you're violating the dairy law if the herd lease agreement allows the distribution of any product besides raw milk. So just my memory is you had to intervene two different times. So the first one injunction. So how did that go?
Well, the first one is the state doesn't know anything about me. They don't know my name. They don't know anything. Okay. So they go into court and you have a preliminary hearing to stop Gobolewski from violating dairy law. That's the gist of it. Hey, judge, we got a farmer here that's violating dairy law. Okay. And by the way, this is where it gets interesting. They use the individual contracts. This is where the immorality of it comes from. They actually use the individual contracts we had that now the Gobolewskis had to log in on a log, you know, individual transactions. They went and used those individual transactions, incredibly enough, and said to the judge, look, this dairy farmer's got a business where he's violating, you know, he's not going wholesale. He's selling this stuff out of his farm. He's violating dairy law by selling raw milk out of his farm to the public. And they used these logs that they had already required as part of owning the cow, owning the herd. And they used these logs as though they were logs from Kroger, a credit card logs for buying milk. It was incredible. So they go into the judge, they say, look, this farmer is violating dairy law. So the judge looks around and he says, after the attorneys start to identify themselves. And after, of course, the state attorneys have identified themselves, there was a lawyer there representing the Gobolewskis personally, because they were also charged personally. So they had to have a personal lawyer. Then they had a farm lawyer that people like you had helped find.
Right. Yep.
So now we have a sponsored farm law through an agency that everybody belonged to, Freedom of Food Rights. And we had a lawyer there. So now there's three lawyers there. And the judge says, okay, and he counts and he sees another lawyer. And that's my lawyer. He says, why are you here? And he says, well, I represent a guy by the name of Mike Lobsinger, who has who's part of a herd share that, in essence, Gobolewski handles his animals. And he wants to make sure his rights aren't violated. Well, boy, the state stood up at that hearing. They went, their hair stood on end. They went haywire. They said, he has no say in this. This is about dairy law. Well, he shouldn't be in here. We don't even know why he's here. They knew why I was there.
Right.
And so my attorney says, well, if Gobolewski has violated dairy law, Your Honor, throw the book at him. Who cares? Just don't confuse dairy law with Mike Lobsinger's rights to have an animal on the Gobolewski farm and his rights to get product from that animal. Well-established rights. And we just want to make sure those rights aren't violated. And what the state is proposing here by shutting him down would violate, in essence, Lobsinger's rights. Okay? So the state, they went into conference pretty much after that. And the state was so freaked out with me being there that they said to the judge, incredibly enough, we're going to drop the case for now. We just want Gobolewski to make a statement that he won't violate dairy law. Well, hell, that's an easy statement to make. Gobolewski put a statement together. He said, I've never violated dairy law, and I never will violate dairy law. And so everybody wrote off after that first hearing. Now, but they kept coming to the farm and doing odd things. So I knew there was going to be a part two to this.
Right. Basically, what there was the judge ordered an injunction against Joe, going just what you said, not violating dairy law. And then, you know, if the way the law works is if you violate that injunction in any way, the state can bring contempt of court charges. If you could go into after this initial injunction, yeah, what happened as far as the inspector in going to the farm?
Yeah. Now let's also bring up something. When they did the agreement with Richard originally, the remedy for violating that agreement lied in the various courts around the state of Michigan. So for example, the problem they had when they went to Richard is they wound up with a local judge that was sympathetic to Richard. And it became clear that the Michigan Department of Agriculture, or whoever this agency was, MDARD or something, whatever this agency was, it became clear that they were going to spend a few years trying to change the law. It seemed like a minor change. And basically what they did was they said, you know, all these dairy cases, you know, we got to consolidate them, and they have to go to a judge in Lansing, which is, you know, the capital of Michigan. And yep. And the thought process was for all of us was you're doing that to get some cronies. So we always felt there was a danger to this. So in any case, when they went to get the Gobolewski, well, Gobolewski was in Standish, Michigan, and up in there. He normally that would have been a local judge that he probably knew. But yeah. Now we're going to Lansing, where this is going to become very impersonal. And quite frankly, we think they knew the judges. So we were always nervous about it. But this judge seemed to be, based on the first hearing, he didn't want to be used. I always got that impression. He didn't want to be used. Okay. So lo and behold, we get to part two. They keep harping. Oh, and by the way, while this was going on, we later learned that they were getting a heck of a lot of calls from the lobby for the dairy associations. So this case was starting to pick up a lot of notice internally from dairy officials that were, you know, giving politicians quite a few bucks. So we knew that it was that they were going to come back, and they did. So now they come back. There's no raids because we've done everything their way. They're just going to say that Gobolevsky needs to be shut down because he continues to violate dairy law. And right. Now we all wind up, all the same parties wind up for a full-blown court case in the fall of whatever it was, 2015 or so.
So they go into this utility room, which really wasn't part of Gobolevsky's dairy, right? Where it just belonged to the leaseholders.
They were only supposed to be able to investigate, if you will, or certify that it's up to standards. They were only able to go on the parts of the dairy farm. They're not allowed to go into his house and go into his bedroom or his bathroom, or for that matter, any other piece of the farm. And right. We had leased, the dairy people had leased a room, and that was our room on the farm. And they demand an entry into that farm.
Yeah, that's where you kept the...
And that's where the refrigerator was with my skim milk, was in that room. Okay? And we had pictures, we had cameras of it. So yeah, they violated it. And, you know, that's a no-no. But you know what? At that point in time, from my standpoint, I didn't think we were going to make any play on that. That was just a, oh, my bad kind of thing. And the judge would still be interested in the bigger picture. And that's indeed what happened. He didn't give a darn if they violated a search warrant type thing. He just didn't care. He was more interested to get this thing off his docket once and for all and find out whether Gobolevsky was violating dairy law. It's the only thing he was interested in. He wasn't interested in how they determined he was violating dairy law, or at least in how they got the, quote, evidence. Right. So that was really what started to happen in the courtroom. Okay.
So you have this hearing. So they bring, well, first off, they bring contempt charges against Joe for continuing to violate, in their view, this written policy that you can only distribute raw dairy through this herd lease agreement. So they're bringing contempt of court charges. You have the hearing over the charges. And yeah, there are just a couple amazing statements at that hearing that the state attorney made. But you were there. So yeah, just describe your impressions of what went on that day.
Okay, we go into the hearing. And they have their lead attorney is a fairly young gal. I've never seen in my life a more nervous attorney. And she had to apologize to the judge more than once, several times, and to the court reporter because they couldn't understand her. She was so nervous. And she would have to take pauses to calm down. And she readily admitted and apologized again to the judge for her nervousness. So she goes up there and she's got this fairly standard spiel about dairy laws and how important it is and for the public safety to honor dairy laws. And it really took a good hour and it was all about dairy laws. It never involved my attorney. It was the three attorneys, the state attorney and the attorney for the farm and the attorney for the Gobolevskys. They were all in there talking about the fact that Gobolevsky wasn't violating dairy law. And it was just one big word salad. I didn't understand much of what was going on. And I started to get darn nervous because my attorney wasn't allowed to speak much during that time. And it just seemed to me that the judge was focusing on these pay logs, these ledgers with money. And the judge seemed to be totally consumed that something rotten in Denmark had to be going on, that Gobolevsky was running a business out of his farm. And he just couldn't get that out of his craw until my attorney got up there finally. So you got an hour of confusion. Nothing looks good for us. Finally, my attorney gets up and says, you know, really, Judge, I don't even know why the hell we're here. Because if they want to get him on dairy law, that's fine. But why are they even talking about the herd ship? That's Lobsinger's rights. They have no right to shut him down to get product from his animal. And they know it. There's no reason for us to even be here. And the judge cut the attorney off, my attorney, And he says, now, wait a minute. You're going to tell me that these logs and these registers mean nothing? That this farmer isn't involved in some clandestine effort? And then my attorney said to the judge, Your Honor, the reason for the logs, it's because the state ordered them to do it that way. My client didn't want to do that. He wanted to deal with just the middleman, which is what the judge thought should have happened. I missed that part. He said, why wouldn't they just go through a middleman and forget this stuff? Why all these logs? Well, when the judge heard that it was required by the state, he paused and said, wait a minute. He turned right to the state lead attorney and says, hold on, is this true? Are you bringing logs to me as evidence that you required from the herd chair? And she sheepishly said, yes, Your Honor, I did. She didn't even know what else to say. Right. Well, now the case was going south fast. Okay, real fast. Then my attorney made a statement that says, you know, Your Honor, it's almost to the point where they could follow somebody like Lobsinger home with an agent, wait outside his house with binoculars. And they could literally raid his house the minute he starts to separate the cream from the milk. They could come in, guns drawn, and raid his house. That's the kind of authority they think they have. And that attorney jumped up, which he shouldn't have done, and made a horrible error. Horrible error. She literally jumped up, and she was a nervous wreck. And she immediately cut my attorney off and said to the judge, that's absurd. That's totally absurd. Lobsinger has every right to make cream or skim milk out of his own milk. He has every right. We would never stop him. That's absurd. It was a horrible statement, and I'll tell you why. She should have kept quiet, and she should have said all along that even I didn't have the ability to make cream or skim milk. Because the minute she said that an owner could do it, meaning me, then that meant to the judge, multiple owners could do it.
Or why couldn't the owner's agent do it?
Couldn't the owner's agent do it? So he then said, the judge was taken aback by it. So he said to her, let me get this straight. Lobsinger can go to the farm or to his house. He can get a milk separator, cream separator, and he could take cream he's going to use for his coffee or skim milk or whatever he's going to use. He could do that separation, and that's perfectly legal to you. And she says, that's correct. And then he said, but it's not legal if he hires somebody to do it or if the other owners do it for him. And she says, that's correct. That's illegal. And the judge said to her, under what law in the state of Michigan is that true? Any law can you show me in the state of Michigan or any policy that says that he's violating? Where is it? And she says, well, Your Honor, there is none. And the judge literally put his head into his hands. And I think the judge had a revelation that he was there to do that, that she was using him to create law, which is the last place he wanted to be.
Right.
So he said to her, So in other words, you want us to make the law here. She basically said, yes, that's what we're here for. So he then immediately got very abrupt. And he said, you know, anybody got anything else to say? Nobody had anything to say except my attorney. My attorney said to the judge, yes, Your Honor, I have one other thing. And this was true. He said, we have a lady that's part of the co-op, a farm owner. She's 94 years old. She can't get out and about. And if the state has her way in her later years, nobody can even give her cream for her coffee. Nobody. That's the absurdity of this, Your Honor. And that was the last statement in the courtroom. And the judge then adjourned and, as we now know, ruled significantly in our favor. And it altered dairy law, at least in the state of Michigan. It settled that whole process and cream issue to the point where I think co-ops of herd shares will now merrily go on forever, because I don't think there's anything else they could use as an angle to stop it. At least that's my humble layman's legal opinion.
Well, I think you're right. And it's not just the co-ops, but what I think your intervention in the case basically did was the first part of this hearing was on Michigan dairy law. And thanks to you and your attorneys, you turned it into a discussion on private property rights, which is where it should have been all along.
And, you know, I'll tell you, there's a lesson for everybody out here. And the lesson is this. You can be talked into what legalities are all you want. Everybody's got angles. I get it. It's complex stuff, all lawsuits. But at the end of the day, you can't give up basic rights. Basic rights are so important to us that if somebody's going to take them away in any food situation and anything related to your health, if somebody's going to take away those rights, they have to be forced, in my mind, to go into a courtroom and say, I am here specifically to take away that person's rights because they don't know what they're doing. And if you don't force a state agency to say those exact words, I am here in this courtroom, Your Honor, to take away an individual's rights to freedom for food, for medical, whatever. I am here to do just that. And then explain your case. Politicians, these health officials, they don't want to do that. But that's exactly why they're in the courtroom. But they're there, they couch it under dairy laws and all this other garbage, okay? But when that attorney was forced in that courtroom, forced to say, that's where she was getting nervous, I am only here to take away that guy sitting over there, Mike Lobsinger, and the likes of him. I am only here to stop him. That's why I'm here, to stop the likes of him. I don't want the likes of him to have a cow, to have milk, have freedom. I don't want that to happen. That's why I'm here. They don't say that, so they have to couch it. And if you don't expose it, if you play the couch game, if you will, how they couch it, if you play their game, nothing but trouble. And we played their game. Oh, you want us to fill out forms? You want us to have a herd agreement that looks like X? Okay, we'll be good little citizens and we'll do it. We never should have done it. We should have told them to go to HELL when they wanted the agreement and say, see you in court. You're not going to violate our rights. But we didn't do that. We signed the agreement. We played the game and we almost lost.
Right.
I like to think things are different now. I like to think that.
Well, I think they are in Michigan. But just for the listeners out there, I mean, Mike, you've been a successful businessman. You had the resources to hire your own attorneys, but believe me, no matter how much money anyone listening out there has, they can still do something like this. There are organizations like the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund or the Institute for Justice that might take on this type of shareholder lawsuit where basically the government is interfering with a private contract.
And, you know, I'll tell you a little sequel to that. A year ago, Richard called me and asked if I would talk to this Amish farmer that he knew and who had a cousin that was being accused of violating dairy law and they were going to shut him down. And I guess the cousin must have been fairly strict Amish because he didn't have a phone. He didn't have a computer. He had nothing. So this other Amish, his cousin or uncle, whatever, was going to try to help him. So he contacted me, told me the story. And I told him to do simple things, again, that all focused on individual rights. Don't fall for answering all of these legal questions about how you're processing the milk, how you're doing this, what your safety measures. Don't fall for that. You know? Just right. Say, I don't know why you're here. You know, I have a cow. I love my animals.
There are multiple people among us that own the cow here in the community. You know, we don't sell anything. We don't do anything. We're just a tight community that loves our animals, and we get our products from our animals. And we think that we have that right. And I gave him a letter to do that. And I later got thanked in volumes because the state came back for more. And then when he responded with the letter, they never came back after him again. And again, they don't want to walk in a courtroom about individual rights. They only want to scare you into violating dairy law. That's all they want to do.
Right. And when you get someone like a mother with young children who has a contract with the farmer, that's the last type individual they want to see in that courtroom, because it's, you know, we've had a history in this country of people being able to obtain the fruits of their choice from the source of their choice. And starting in the 20th century, when you had those federal laws, the Food and Drug Act, the Federal Meat Inspection Act, those tried to go away. And they weren't, when it comes to the small farmers weren't the people causing the problems that led to those laws. And really, you mentioned it earlier, the reason for this Michigan policy where you can only distribute raw milk is that processing is where the money's at. So this has nothing to do with food safety. Butter, there's a case right now with Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, petitioning FDA to lift the interstate ban on raw butter. And there's not a single instance clearly laid out in the record where commercially produced raw butter, and I would call a herd chair, I mean, that's commerce as far as the services the farmer is providing, was found to have caused any foodborne illness outbreaks. So this is about money, and in the process of just creating this favorable climate for the industry, they are trampling on individual rights, like you said.
And, you know, the sequel to this was that the Gobolewski farm ultimately, Horizon ultimately came to him and said, you know what? You either stop the herd share or you're going to lose us. We're not going to come by your farm and pick up the milk anymore, and you're going to lose our business. And he was a nervous wreck, and, you know, he dropped the herd share. So in the end, the state got from him what they wanted. They got him out of the herd share business, if you want to call it a business. And Jenny then had to find another farmer, and she did find another farmer, a very, very good farmer. And the irony here is, and I was talking to them about it because they did call me. I had become friends with them, and they really wanted my opinion. And, you know, and I sympathize with them. They want to make a living. They have a beautiful farm. But I warned them. I said, you know, getting in bed with the devil a bit here, because if they can control you and tell you what other businesses you can do and can't, they're just not going to be a nice business partner. And ultimately what they did was, and I haven't checked with them in a few years, but I know for a fact that these places just kept cutting the share price
right
for all of these farmers. You know, once they got you, you know, pretty soon you have to cut your standards to be able to make a buck, because they just, I mean, it's hard to keep an animal and do it healthy. That's why the raw milk is expensive compared to store-bought milk, because it requires more care of the animal. And these people, they're not interested in that. They're just interested in getting it into a plastic gallon at the cheapest price possible and marketing it up. That's all they're interested in.
Well, yeah, the other thing, Mike, was that I think this all happened when Dannon bought out Horizon. And so, you know, the Gobolewskis gave up a good income stream. And I don't know if it's happened in Michigan, but Dannon, you know, in the years within the past year cut about anywhere from 75 to 100 farmers in New England.
Well, and you know, I haven't checked back with them, as I said, but I can tell you this. Both Jenny and Richard, I think we're getting to the point where I don't know how they'll get it. Maybe they'll shut the customer base off for a while. I mean, they're really growing. It's a very healthy stream. I mean, people want this fresh product. And I can tell you that since that day in 2006 or so that I signed up drinking the raw milk, my family, our health has never been better. It just has never, ever been better. So nobody's going to lecture me on the safety of it. Nobody's going to lecture me on the health benefit. Nobody. I mean, I see it. It's not anecdotal. Our human systems are very complex. They are not anecdotal.
Right.
The feedback you get from your own body is anything but anecdotal. It's a complex process that ultimately tells you whether you're healthy or not. And I can tell you, and I see this in Northern Michigan with other Amish that drink raw milk. There's no question of the health benefits of this stuff. There's just zero question about it. And I'm not interested in having them take away my legal rights. And quite frankly, I'm not interested in them telling me what I should do and shouldn't do for my health. I'm just not interested in it. I don't trust them on either front.
Right. Well, I think you mentioned it earlier when we were talking. When the judge asked in the case, what are you doing there? I think your response is, what is the Michigan Department of Agriculture doing here?
Right? Yeah, I didn't say that to the judge, but my response when the judge said to my attorney, my response in my mind was, hey, what's Lobsinger doing here? And I thought the question is, what the hell is the state doing here? You know, what the hell are they doing here? Which ultimately became the question that was asked. Why are you here? What is your role to guide and direct Mr. Lobsinger? What is your role to control him? You have no role to control him. Zero. Zero.
Right.
And that's ultimately the way it turned out. And I would urge anybody, if you're listening to this podcast, and I mean, it's not just with milk, it's with so many things. Don't quickly give up your individual rights. Don't think that's a given, for God's sake. That's not a given. People take away your rights, they better say that they're doing that and why.
Yeah, and like you said, since COVID, there are more and more people going to the local food system, buying direct from the farm. You know, I think the industry is going through somewhat of a loss of market share. I don't know how big it is, so... Just with a revolving door you have between the agencies and the industry, yeah, there might come a point again where the dairy industry or some other big part of the food industry goes to the regulators and goes, we're not happy about this. Aren't these people violating the law? So I guess just a question for you is what would your recommendation be for people wanting to strengthen their local food system and just tightening the bond between the farmer and the farmer's patrons?
Well, you know, I think I have a simple recommendation on it. You know, for starters, I think people are very comfortable. They go in the store and they see all of these, you know, look-alike tomatoes and, you know, lettuce that's being sprayed with little drizzle water and everything looks so fresh and good. You know, really, just take one day. You have to want to do this. You can't say to somebody, and I've talked to people that say, oh, you drink raw milk? Tell me all about it. I might tell them about it, but they don't want to learn about it. My advice is first and foremost, really learn about it. Go take a country drive like people used to. Go past confinement farms. Just go past them and smell them, for example. And then tell yourself that it's fine and dandy to drink the stuff coming out of those factory farms. Tell yourself that. And then go buy some of these farms where the cows are in beautiful pastures with beautiful blue sky and some white clouds and sunshine and the like and the beauty of it. Look at it. And then tell yourself that it's better to drink that stuff out of these farms that are factories versus this fresh stuff that nature produces every day. Just go look at some of these farms that have beautiful fields of lettuce and things like that that you could buy from directly. I mean, in France, they talk about the vineyards and how people love to go through the vineyards. Hey, Michigan and places like Michigan, all the Midwest, for that matter, everywhere. Beautiful farms that people would go out there and meet the farmer and look at them, meet the local growers. You would want to do it. And that's the whole point. You have to get a psyche that you want to do it. If all you want is convenience and you want to eat the cheapest way possible, then do that. You're not going to win and you're not going to enjoy food. Every time I get people to take time to meet farmers and introduce them to local farmers, I see them at the market all in line with these local farmers, and it becomes an art form to buy your stuff. It's an art form. And it's a wonderful art form. And you really enjoy your food more. And you become healthier. And it's just fun. I mean, really, for God's sakes, it's fun. But if you just want to go stand in line at the grocery store with your coupons, get these products, hey, good luck. Good luck. You're not going to enjoy your health. You're not going to enjoy the process. But I mean, that's the way we do things. But I would sure like to see more people just take time to really understand and support some of these local farmers. I think they would enjoy it a lot more and have better health.
Well, I think, yeah, just the American consumer is often accused of being about the convenience, that being the most important thing. But I think what's happened the last couple of years, and just the fact that they see how unreliable the medical system has become for so many people, that just diet is one of the most important facets of maintaining a good health.
Well, I was just going to say to that, my wife and I, for example, we did get the cootie. We did get it in October. We had the Delta variant, and it was very serious in Michigan. Still is. I mean, very, very serious. I'm 73 years old now. My wife's a year and a half behind me, catching up. And, you know, when we got it, I had followed protocols from other doctors that weren't part of the mainstream. And we literally had 24 hours of symptoms. Now, people will poo-poo that. And by the way, there's even studies, you can look at this, on lactoferrin. Well, lactoferrin's in raw milk. And that's become a study. University of Michigan has studied it. You know, it helps out remarkably with the virus. Again, just a study, but I can only tell you that I've talked to all these farmers that do the milk, or the three main farmers that I deal with, because I deal with one in Florida. They have thousands of herd share owners, and there just hasn't been any real outbreaks. Certainly nobody going to the hospital or dying. So you're not going to tell me the diet and the laws of nature don't have a lot to do with the survival of this thing. You're just not going to tell me it doesn't. And again, we had 24 hours of symptoms. So I'm going to stick with my methods. Other people can stick with theirs. It's their business.
Right. Well, I just, you know, if you look at acute illness and chronic illness, just, yeah, I mean, knock wood, there haven't been that many cases in recent years of outbreaks attributed to raw milk. But when you think about chronic illness too, there's no question that getting raw milk and other products from the farm, putting more of your purchases into farm products, is the way to optimal health. Because when you take into account all the chronic illness in this country, it's just, yeah, there's no comparison between the industrial food system and the local food system right now.
Well, you know, Pete, you've been a big part of this. I met you in that lawsuit, and you really helped me. I remember the first time I ever talked to you on the phone. And ironically, I had a place in Florida that was just a few miles from your place, so we've become friends. But more importantly, I applaud you for everything you do, and I hope people understand that the importance that people like you have played, because I saw it firsthand, the important role you played in this. I mean, I don't know that I would have been able to do it without the likes of you. And it was, I think you were glad to find somebody like me that wanted freedom. And I was glad to find somebody like you that was willing to help in the legal process to make sure those rights were enforced. Well, so I thank you too.
I've told you this, Mike. I haven't seen anyone really at least do successfully what you've done to this day. And it's just for people who want to help their farmer. I mean, a lot of them, if the farmer's in trouble, they'll contact the department to, try and get the agency to back off. They'll try, put it out on social media just to expand public pressure against the agency taking the enforcement action. But I'd love to see more of what you did. Actually, just getting involved in the case itself as a party, because that's a side of the equation. The regulators don't want to face in a courtroom. But just last thing was when the judge ruled for Joe Golombieski in the case and basically said there wasn't the state hadn't met their burden of proof. There wasn't enough evidence to convict. To find him guilty of contempt of court. At the time, you'd filed a separate lawsuit against the Court of Claims just in case this one didn't work out. And what happened after with the government finally leaving him alone, even though there was actually the last raid on his farm was the day he got the court decision back. But I take it, I think you'd filed a lawsuit with the Michigan Court of Claims. But if this kind of thing happens again, that's basically ready to go, right?
That was really an insurance policy. I'm not sure we would have ever gone there. I think judges don't like to override other judges. The Court of Claims was basically that they took away my rights. It was a different type of thing. Whereas since we won in the dairy part of it, that I had the right for the herd share, I got my rights. I never was optimistic about the Court of Claims. It was just more of a, another bite of the apple, if you will. I'm glad it turned out the way it did. And I think it turned out better than going to the Court of Claims. And, maybe in the future, somebody would have to go to that. I'm not even certain the differences in all the courts and what one would have ruled over the other. But again, we won in the home field of the where they wanted to take us. We won on their home field, in their home court. And I don't think you can do any better than that. And they haven't acted up since.
Just a great result. I mean, now they've started to get Maine. I don't know if you heard, but Maine actually passed a constitutional amendment just guaranteeing the right in the Constitution to not only grow and produce your own food, but also the right to, there is the word acquisition in there, which in my view for sure would cover something like your situation with a farmer and the herd lease agreement. So it's,
I'm super glad to hear that, obviously. And I'll tell you, I take comfort in thinking at least that every little bit helped to get there, even if it's a different state, because I can tell you there were a lot of states looking at that court case. And when they were handed such a defeat, and they realized that in the future, people were going to start walking in and saying, now, this isn't about dairy law. This is about rights. This is about individual rights. I just don't think they wanted any part of it. And when they started to look at the equation from that angle, maybe even they came along. I don't know. I like to think so.
Well, no, I think that's true. I think one of the things you get is sometimes when the agency just sees that someone like you is going to be back there again and again, if they don't respect your private property rights, they change their position. I mean, sometimes that's what has to happen. You make it uncomfortable enough for the agency where they're going to adopt a new stance on something. And that's what you did. But all right, Mike. Well, yeah, this has been great. Thanks for being on. Hopefully, yeah, you've inspired some people to get more involved in protection of the farmer if the farmer's going through a rough time with the regulators. But just, yeah, this looks like it's a new era we're going into. Just the conventional food system is having a lot of trouble right now. And this is, I think, very important, just providing the kind of support to the local food producers that you did.
Yep, our rights are sacred to this stuff. And I would urge people to think that way and really fight for them. Really, really, really fight for them. Okay?
Yep. All right. Thank you, sir.
Well, thanks, Pete. Thank you very much.
Take care.